What happens when the one thing that has defined your entire life, your physical prowess, your speed, your strength, starts to fade?
When the body that made you a legend can no longer keep up with the mind that still craves victory?
It's the one opponent no athlete can ever beat, right? Father Time. And it's a battle caught not just on the field or the track, but almost entirely in the mind.
Exactly. And that's what we're diving into today, the psychology of sports and age. You know, as a storyteller, I've always been fascinated by this. We celebrate the meteoric rise, the peak performance, but the most compelling drama for me is often in that third act. The adaptation, the struggle, the search for a new identity when the old one is slipping away.
Yeah, I feel that. I think for me, it's also personal. I remember watching my childhood heroes, these almost mythical figures, play into their late 30s or 40s. You could see the game was still there in their eyes, but their bodies just couldn't always execute. And on a much, much smaller scale, I think anyone who's ever tried to play a pickup game in their 30s after not running for a while knows a tiny fraction of that feeling.
Ha, absolutely. It's a universal experience, just magnified to an incredible degree. So today, we're going to explore that. How do these elite performers, these champions, mentally cope with the inevitable physical decline? What strategies do they use to reinvent their game and maintain that competitive edge?
And what about the transition, moving from the star player to a veteran role, a mentor, or even facing retirement? That's a huge psychological hurdle. We'll be looking at how sports psychology plays a critical role in helping athletes navigate not just the end of a season, but the end of an era in their lives.
It's a conversation about resilience, adaptation, and the incredible power of the human mind to redefine success. So the question is, how do you win when the rules of the game, the very rules of your own body, have changed?
Let's find out. This is a topic that affects every single person, athlete or not, and I can't wait to unpack it.
So let's start there with that redefinition. I think one of the most fascinating shifts is when an athlete moves from being a purely physical force to, well, a strategic one. They can't just outrun or overpower everyone anymore. They have to outthink them.
It's the classic evolution from a player of speed to a player of angles. You see it in tennis all the time. A player who used to win with a 140-mile-per-hour serve suddenly starts winning with placement, with spin, with drawing their opponent into a trap three shots ahead.
Yes, the court shrinks in a way. Not physically, but mentally. They're not trying to cover every inch with raw speed. They're making their opponent run, controlling the geometry of the game. But that shift, that can't be easy. Your entire identity, your whole career, might be built on being the fastest.
Oh, it's a huge psychological battle. It's almost a grieving process. You have to grieve the player you once were to fully become the player you need to be now. Some athletes fight it. They keep trying to force that 140-mile-per-hour serve, and you see the frustration, the unforced errors pile up because they're chasing a ghost.
And that's the tragedy, isn't it? When the mind hasn't caught up with the body's new reality. Is that a conscious decision, do you think? Or is it something that happens gradually, almost subconsciously, for the ones who succeed at it?
I think it's a mix. For some, a savvy coach or a mentor can plant the seed. They'll say, look, you can't get to that spot in two steps anymore, but you can see the play developing earlier and get there in three. They help them leverage what they've gained, experience.
That's a great way to put it, leveraging experience. It's not a consolation prize. It becomes their primary weapon. Think of an aging point guard in basketball. They don't have that explosive first step to the hoop, but they see the passing lanes before anyone else. They use fakes. They use their eyes. They manipulate the entire defense without ever leaving a 10-foot circle.
Right. They're playing chess while the younger players are playing checkers. But that requires an immense amount of humility to accept that you need a different toolkit. What I find really interesting is the emotional side of that. Do they enjoy the game more or less when it becomes so cerebral?
That is a fantastic question. I wonder if the satisfaction is different. Maybe it's less about the visceral thrill of pure dominance and more about the deep, quiet satisfaction of artistry, of solving a puzzle that no one else could.
Like a master craftsman versus a sledgehammer. Both can get the job done, but one feels more refined, more earned in a way. It's a victory over your opponent, but it's also a victory over your own physical limitations. And that might be the sweetest win of all.
But that victory over yourself, it has to change the dynamic in a team setting, right?
I mean, you've got this 35-year-old veteran who's playing chess, and right next to them in the locker room is this 21-year-old phenom who is, for all intents and purposes, a human sledgehammer.
How? How do those two even communicate?
That's where the real drama happens. It's not always a smooth transition of the torch. Sometimes the veteran sees the rookie and feels a pang of jealousy, a reminder of what they used to be. And the rookie? They might look at the veteran and just see someone who's slow, who can't keep up. They don't respect the chess because they've never needed it. They can just flip the whole board over with raw talent.
Exactly. There's a knowledge gap, but there's also a respect gap. The veteran is trying to impart wisdom, saying, hey, watch the way the defender shifts his hips before the play even starts. And the rookie is just thinking, dude, I can just run past him.
Yeah. And who's right? In that one moment, the rookie might be. But over a season, over a career, that's the rub. The successful teams, the dynasties, they're the ones where that gap gets bridged, where the veteran has the humility to mentor and the rookie has the wisdom to listen.
But that requires such incredible self-awareness on both sides. It's so easy for that relationship to curdle, for the veteran to become gatekeeper of that knowledge, almost resentful.
And that brings up the other side of this coin we've been discussing. Yeah, what about the ones who can't make that transition, the ones who refuse to become the master craftsman?
Oh, that's the dark path. That's the athlete who hangs on one season too long, the one who becomes a liability, but their reputation, their contract, it keeps them on the team. They're not just chasing the ghost of their former selves. They're actively trying to prove that ghost is still real, and it can become toxic.
It really can, because they're in a state of denial, and that denial doesn't just affect their own performance. It can poison a whole locker room. Younger players lose respect. Coaches are in a difficult position. It's a slow, painful public decline, and it's agonizing to watch because you know the greatness that was there.
It's a concept in psychology called identity foreclosure. For their entire lives, since they were maybe 5 or 6 years old, their answer to who are you has been, I'm a basketball player or I'm a sprinter. It's not what they do, it's who they are. When the physical ability to perform that identity starts to crumble, their entire sense of self, their very foundation, begins to collapse.
Wow. Identity foreclosure. That's incredibly powerful. So it's not just about losing a game or a spot on the team. It's a genuine existential crisis. They're looking in the mirror and not recognizing the person looking back because that person can't do the one thing that has defined their existence.
And that is where we see the real tragedies happen. Well after the final whistle blows. Depression, substance abuse, financial ruin.
Mm-hmm.
It all stems from that inability to answer the question, if I'm not that, then who am I? It's a terrifying void for anyone to face, let alone someone who's lived their life in the spotlight, defined by physical perfection.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the question that we as fans maybe need to ask ourselves, isn't it? We build these people up into gods defined by a single superhuman skill. And then we know that death. We're surprised when they feel lost once that skill is gone. Are we part of the problem by not celebrating the transition, the wisdom, the person, as much as we celebrate the performance?
That's interesting. A really pointed question. I think we want the highlights. We want the explosive plays. We don't always have the patience for the chess match. We see the veteran taking a different role, and our first thought is often, oh, they've lost a step, not, wow, look at how they've evolved.
Exactly. We're complicit in their identity foreclosure because we only value one version of their identity. Hmm.
But, you know, the hopeful part of this, and I have to believe there's a hopeful part, is the growing awareness around mental health in sports. The support systems are getting better. Athletes are now talking openly about seeing therapists, about planning for a life after the game. It's not a perfect solution, but it's a start. They're learning to build the second and third acts of their lives before the first one ends.
That's the key, isn't it? Not waiting until you're staring into that void. It's about diversifying your own personal identity. So that athlete is a huge part of who you are, but it's not the only part. You're also a parent, a business person, a student of something new.
But a really bad guitarist, in some cases.
A truly terrible guitarist. But it's something else. It's another room in the house of your identity. So when one door closes, you're not left standing in the street.
You know, as we wrap this up, the thing that's really sticking with me is how this whole journey, this arc, it's not just for superstars. It's a compressed, high-stakes version of what everyone goes through. You age out of a certain job, your kids leave home, you can't play pickup basketball without pulling a hamstring.
Mm-hmm.
We all have to face a version of ourselves that can't do what it used to.
That's so true. The stakes are just lower, and thankfully it's not broadcast on national television. For me, I think the ultimate takeaway is a narrative one.
The most compelling victory isn't the championship ring. It's the quiet victory of self-reinvention. It's the athlete who successfully becomes the coach, the mentor, the mot. Mm-hmm. The person who finds a new way to win long after the cheering has stopped.
Finding a new game to play. I love that. What a fascinating conversation. Thanks for digging into this with me.
Always. It's these human stories behind the stats that are endlessly captivating. To everyone listening, thank you for joining us on this exploration of the mind of the athlete.
We'll see you next time.
Take care, everyone.